Is a recession on its way? And tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. Read more about it.
This is Jerry Toome with Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station, or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams. Well, Jerry, a lot of the stuff we're reading from different researchers, different headlines, a lot of negativity out there, a lot of woe is me, the sky is falling. So we just got to determine how much of that is too much emotion, because we know how our emotions affect how we look at the world, and how much of that is based on actual data as to what's actually going on.
Michael, I think a lot of it is data-driven, and clearly emotions are going to enter in this. You're not going to go through such chaotic, in my mind, of course, we all know President Trump seems to love chaos. He seems to thrive in that kind of environment, and he gets a lot of what he wants because he creates the chaos. He's the source of the chaos frequently. But I think a lot of it is, there's so much yet to be determined. Depends on who you're reading, too. We've been reading tons of stuff on, really boning up on tariffs, because I really hadn't focused on tariffs a whole lot in my career. I've been doing this since 1980, so 44 going on 45 years now, really. And in the past, tariffs have really not been that meaningful about anything, really, because they've just kind of been ignored by all the administrations up until now. And Trump took a little bit of a spoonful of it out in, his previous administration, but not much, nothing like this. This is a complete landslide revolution, the way he's approaching it right now. The bottom line, if I were to give you my best guess right now, it might not be as bad as it appears that it could get. Trump obviously is aware. He watches the stock market. Bessent, his Treasury Secretary, is in particularly concerned about the bond market, because we had a scare with the bond market a few weeks ago where interest rates started spiking in the bonds. And he said, look, Prez, bro, you got to tone this down. You get the bond market upset, you got real trouble. The stock market can come back, and the stock market, but the stock market's one-fifth the size of the bond market. And if you're going to have to finance the debt of the federal government, which you're going to have to do, you cannot let the bond market get out of control.
Trump's used to the chaos because that's what's worked for him in business.
Yeah.
Right?
But it is.
The bond market, the stock market, hates chaos.
Exactly.
So he's got to find a balance in the two.
He loves it, too. I've been spending the last couple of weeks. We were in Hawaii last week, the last 2 weeks, and so I kind of just took complete rest from even doing research for the most part up until right at the very end. Then I've been boning up on it, and the amount of reading I had to do to get caught up has just been amazing. But the bottom line is the tariffs, any way you slice it, is tightening. When you've got a situation where the Federal Reserve has already raised interest rates, in my opinion, too high, and if you go back and look at this, I'm looking at a chart of the 10-year Treasury yields from Bank Credit Analysts. It goes back to the mid-90s, early 90s. And every single time you get to a point where they tighten too much, then you have a problem. You have some sort of eruption of some sort. Something blows. So kind of like the old analogy I used to use about the World War II submarines. They go down.
Right.
Then the Germans are dropping, or the Japanese are dropping big barrels, the big barrels full of depth charges on them. They go lower and lower and lower, and they get too low, then the spring starts somewhere. Something pops, so that all of a sudden the pipes are going, psh, and they're spraying water everywhere, and now you have an emergency. You got to stop the leak because you're too low, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of what happens when the Fed raises rates and keeps them too high for too long, which I think they have. In hindsight, I think in a couple of years we'll go back and go, well, you're right. They raised it for too long and made them too high. And if you really want to look at it, and I don't have a chart of this in front of me, but if there's a real simple way to kind of figure out, is it too high and is it too long? You track the two-year yield. You track the two-year treasury yield. Why? Because that's supply and demand driven. It's not put together by a committee of men who sometimes don't change their opinions fast enough, which is normally the case. They tend to lag too long. But, I mean, look at this chart, and we're going to put this in one of our newsletters probably in the near term. In 1984, rates went way too high. They had a bankruptcy of Continental Illinois, which was, I think, the third largest bank in the country at the time, 1984. 87 stock market crash is another peak in interest rates. 1990 recession. The Mexico peso crisis in 94. The Asian crisis in 97. The tech bubble burst in 2000. Great financial crisis, 2008. Euro area credit crisis in 2013. Taper tantrum. 2018 global emergency crash, and then, of course, rates are now going up past where they've been for the last 20 years, and the question is, what next? So my gut feeling is the Fed has gone too far. I understand what they're saying. They're saying, hey, the evidence, we have the dual mandate. The dual mandate is we want to make sure that inflation stays low and unemployment stays low as well, and sometimes those are contradictory in terms of they're counterbalancing each other, or they're contradicting each other. And so right now they're on hold. So they're kind of like, okay, we're not going to cut rates anymore. We cut rates a little bit. But the bottom line is this is going to be like, the way I'm picturing this in my mind right now, this tariff war thing, kind of like if you ever have Turkey Day and you eat just way too much at Thanksgiving, and you feel terrible because you've stuffed yourself with false food and then the desserts and everything else. And it's like, takes 2 or 3 days to kind of get back to normal.
But it was so good going in.
I know, but you got to digest that stuff. And that's kind of what this feels like. It's like, okay, we have just had a cram session of chaotic. At least they look on the surface, it looks chaotic. And of course, as you mentioned before the show, the bond market hates chaos and uncertainty. The stock market hates chaos and uncertainty.
Trump loves it.
He loves it. Yes, that's how he gets what he wants. He creates chaos. So I was thinking about that this morning. Okay, so picture him trying to buy, or maybe let's say he wants to sell one of his big hotels, in New York or wherever. Okay, well, I want $100 million for it. And then eventually he settles for 70. But settling for 70 was really what his original target was.
Four above his original target.
Yeah. So he's not going to sell below 70, but his asking price is going to be 100. And he does that both on the buys and the sells, mm-hmm. to buy somebody out of bankruptcy or whatever. The bottom line is that's his MO. That's the way he does stuff.
It's by his own book.
I know. But nobody's used to somebody trying to take that kind of approach to tariffs and international trade.
Or the government in general.
Exactly. So you look at this and you go, okay, I think a leak has sprung. The question is, how devastating is it going to be? My view of the world today still is, I think we started a bear market. I reserve, I change my opinion later. I do see, we're below the 200-day moving average. That's going to be a really important thing to watch. If you look at the average bear in a recession, the average recession for bears is about 10 months. The average bear market, if it's in a recession, is 14 months. So to me, again, my view is we've broken into a bear. Reserve the right, change my opinion later. To me, it would take miraculous intervention, if you will, for the trade tariff thing not to disrupt economies enough, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. Oftentimes there's a geopolitical trigger involved, which we don't have right now, although Iran is sitting over there like a time bomb at some point, but Trump has apparently called Israel off. Maybe Israel will decide to stay with Trump on that, on staying off and not attacking them on their own. We will see, but that's a big potential problem up there. And so the issue really is usually when you are in a situation, when you start a bear market, which is where I think we are, the Fed has been tightening, and the Fed historically, maybe I need, next newsletter, I need to put one of the charts in there to show, okay, here's where the Fed was, and here's the next bear, and here's where the Fed was, and here's the next bear, and here's where the Fed was, here's the next bear. It's kind of like a yo-yo process. It just goes up and down and up and down, but the Fed is usually, if not the primary culprit, a major part of the culprit of starting the next bear, but they're worse when you have stocks overvalued, and as we talked about ad infinitum last year, stocks have been extremely expensive. Even after this correction, they're still expensive, very expensive, historically speaking. So, and what happens, historically speaking, is if we do have a shutdown in the economy, the question right now that's open for debate is how much of an economic slowdown will we see because of all this uncertainty? So I've been boning up on this because tariffs have never been something I had to particularly pay a whole lot of attention to because they hadn't been that meaningful until now, even though I've been doing this radio show or starting radio in 1980. So we've got issues with the economy. Depends on how disruptive is it going to be. But it's not just the tariffs. I want to spend quite a bit of time on the tariffs today. But let's look at the other factors that are involved. You know, the trade deficit has already exploded to the upside. Now, again, trade deficit, a lot of people look at that and go, well, that's bad because we don't manufacture products in the U.S. My view of that is a little different. If we can make it in Vietnam, because we're not going to be making it in China probably, over time we're moving away from them, or you can make it in Mexico, or you make it somewhere else. In essence, what you're doing is you're elevating the living standards of those people. If you look at the living standards of people, and I'll use China as an example here. I've got many, many, many other examples we could use, but China seems to be right in the middle of the crosshairs right now. China in 1980, their GDP, that's the gross domestic product per capita, per person, since then it's gone up a mere 28-fold, not 28%, 28-fold, 28 times what it was. You were at $430 per person, GDP per capita in 1980. Now you're around $12,200. Their GDP has gone from 2% compared to the United States in 1990 up to 18 to 19%. That's 2% of the world GDP, rather, to 18 to 19% now. They were 19% urbanized in 1980. They're 67% urbanized now, meaning people moved to the cities. So you can make the case this is very good for China if we don't have to deal with them as an enemy. Now, if we have to deal with them as a military enemy, this is not a good idea to build them up, right? But the same thing has happened to many, many emerging markets, especially in Asia. So you've got Vietnam coming up. You've had South Korea for a long time. They started, predated what happened in China. You've got all these countries over there that are building their wealth, that are becoming more wealthy than they were before. We used to call them underdeveloped nations. Now we call them developing nations. So they're not poverty-stricken, no money. If you remember, Patrick Swayze did the movie about India. You know, that was just the type of devastation that they used to have in India, and they still have some of that, but they're moving the right direction. So on the one hand, if you look at it from a big picture perspective, what's good for Earth, what's good for people in the world, urbanization and the, you know, urbanization process, but the globalization process has been positive, net-net. Sure. But it's been negative net-net for certain industries in America. So President Trump wants to revive factories in America. And we do have some notable companies, like some of the foreign auto companies, are bringing their people, they're setting up factories in the U.S.
Pharmaceuticals?
They're not doing that out of the goodness of their heart, though. They're doing it because economically they can make it work. And if they're going to get penalized by tariffs, then it's better to just build it here or manufacture it here if you're going to go to U.S. People. But the trade deficit issue is not the only issue going on right now in terms of the economy and whether we're going to have a recession or not. I will be surprised, and I may have to eat my hat, and I've done this before. That's a bad thing for me to say, Michael, because sometimes I have to eat my hat. I did that last year. I said, if we're not in a bear market by X time, I'll eat my hat. And by February, I was early. I was a few months early.
Technically, you said you'd have egg on your face.
But, oh, did I?
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway.
Because I remember threatening, hey, we ought to take a picture of that.
So anyhow, the trade deficit issue is a big one. That's the biggest one right now. DOGE, again, it's necessary. This is like surgery that you have to get the cancer out of the patient. And the amount of the corruption is just insane that they've found, that Elon Musk has found, even to the point where he's publicly stated, I'm not going to tell everything I know because I would be assassinated. There's no way they'll let me live. But there's going to be a lot of people laid off. Now, those have not officially hit the rolls yet because, again, they got a six-month furlough kind of package deal to lay them, you know, take early retirement or whatever, you know, type of thing. That shows up in the fall, like October. The deportation, fewer workers. There's going to be issues because of that. Tourism right now is plunging. there's a negative wealth effect to the economy. And we're not trying to be negative Nellies here, folks. We're trying to always, my goal, I'm not always perfect on this, is to tell you the truth, whether it's good or bad, then let you make your own decisions. But there's no doubt at the moment, there's what we call a negative wealth effect. Now, this is starting to show up, for example, in the recent filings or the recent statements of the airlines. Airlines have said, hey, the first class people don't care. Well, that makes sense. People that fly first class probably have more money and probably more money in the stock market and the real estate has gone up and all that. But the negative effect is starting to affect the coach people. So a lot of the traffic, and I'm not talking about the month of April, I'm talking about now, you know, just because this all of a sudden we had the shock of the April 2nd Liberation Day, and then everybody's screaming and going, I don't know what that even means for 2 weeks at least. There's going to be a delayed impact on that, but there's also seeing a significant drop in tourism right now. Because, and it's not just the negative wealth effect, that will affect us more if we have an ongoing bear market. CapEx right now is collapsing. Now, could this resurrect? Yes, but how quick? And that's one of the main points that one of the CEOs of one of the major Fortune 500 kind of companies said in one of his recent filings. He said, when people make a decision to stop buying or slam on the brakes on things they don't have to have right now, and they cut back because they're afraid of their job or they're afraid of the market or whatever, it's not like flipping a switch just to get them to turn back on to spend again. So there's going to be, if we have just a very mild economic recession downturn here, it's still going to take a while to get back out of that, months probably. But CapEx is collapsing. What does that mean? That means they're not building new factories. They screech, everything's on hold. A lot of people don't realize how important CapEx is. CapEx is very important. It's kind of like if I had a big boulder and I'm trying to move it with my arms and my back and push on it, and I can't get it to move, that's one thing. But if I get a long crowbar, stick that long crowbar under the bottom, called leverage, and use that long crowbar, get out on the other end of it and pull it, oftentimes I can move that rock. So the issue is there's an effect that CapEx is only, corporate spending is 10%+ of the economy. So you think, well, 10%+ of the economy going negative is not going to hurt anything, is it? Oh, yeah, it has. Because there's such a follow-on effect, if you will, from the CapEx stopping that it means not fewer factories. So right now, CEOs in the country, for the most part, we're not seeing massive layoffs yet that could be coming, but they're right now on hold. So if we have, and I hate to be sarcastic about this, but sometimes I like being sarcastic, you never know. Anyway, if we have this, Tinkerbell, ding, here's a magic wand, or Wicked Witch of the, not Wicked Witch, the Good Witch in Wizard of Oz, Dorothy, click your heels, tick, tick, you know, you're back to, if we have an overnight miraculous turn, which I just have a hard time believing is going to occur, then maybe this doesn't go very deep. It's just a shallow turn down. I'll be shocked if we don't end up with a negative print on the gross domestic product this quarter. We had a very mild one in the first quarter, which was kind of distorted by, you know, the escaping the Trump tariffs type of behavior. But the bottom line is, I think we're already in a mild recession now, probably by the third quarter for sure. Manufacturing new orders are falling off the cliff. Durable goods purchasing, that's high-end items that people buy, humans. The chart on it shows the worst drop all the way back to the 1970s. So the durables that people are planning on buying, consumers. Now, what they plan and what they do don't always match perfectly. So you have to have that caveat. Sometimes they say, here's what I'm planning, and then they do something different. But if you look at durables, that would be things like refrigerators and stuff like that, expensive items, then the durable goods purchasing has dropped to the worst in history of the chart, back to the late 1970s. Astoundingly to me, that's worse than the 2008 market was on durables. And the same thing with car purchasing, worse back to the late 70s, even worse than 2008. So if you look at the Conference Board's leading economic index, which we've been talking about for a while, at least a year, It's been leading by a very long lag time.
It's been hard to remember when it wasn't going down.
It's been going down since 2023, I think. But the bottom line is, it's at a level now that was only exceeded in 2008 and matches the 74 and the 82 bear markets and recessions. So I think we're probably in a recession now. I don't think it's a severe recession at this point. I think it will be able to be. It can be a deeper recession if things continue to compound negatively. I think from here, Trump's got all the incentive in the world to try to resurrect this thing as fast as I can. So the bottom line is he's going to try to be bringing everything back. But with the tourism, the deportations, the economic woes, there's just all sorts of things that are negative for the economy right now. I just don't see this turning around overnight. The question becomes, what's next? So if you look at the history, and there's, again, no way to predict what I'm about to say, but if you look at the history of the bigger bear markets and the bigger recessions, it's not just one thing. It's never just one thing. It's multiple things, and they don't all hit in the first inning either. Sometimes they hit in there's always a trigger event. So just like the chart that I read from earlier, the 10-year Treasury yields, we got, 12 or 15 crises of some sort where interest rates topped, which meant the Fed had raised rates too high. And then you had to lower interest rates because of a crisis. 1990 recession, Mexico peso crisis, Asian crisis, tech bubble, global financial crisis, euro, et cetera, all of these. In each case, the Fed had raised rates too high, and the Fed, not trying to bash the Fed is a committee of men. But those committee of men tend to be focusing most of the time on backward-looking data, not looking in the future too much. They understand there is a future, but they're quote, data-driven. All right, so if you're data-driven, Michael, you're a stats professor, teacher, yep. You're looking at the data. All right, well, the data tells you X, but the data does not do a good job of extrapolating the future direction of things.
Correct.
It tells you where you are right now.
Because I would tell you that in class, we can't extrapolate. If once you start extrapolating, the trend you see now may not hold.
Right, exactly. And the economy is a moving target constantly. It's like going from... Okay, well, if I were going out to go deer hunting, it's one thing to try to, put my scope and get my scope sighted to where I can hit the bullseye at 100 yards. That's quite different than shooting a deer who's running around. Okay, so that's kind of the analogy I would use with what the Fed's doing. They're looking at the scope. That's their way of looking at it. They're looking through the scope and they're seeing what they see. But the issues change. And the unintended consequences are always, usually, almost always what hit us. So if we are going, let me give you a best case and a worst case scenario here. Best case scenario, Trump starts talks with China, which apparently he's already starting. And I think, again, as you and I were talking about before the show, he said, okay, I want to sell my business for $100 million, my hotel casino for $100 million. He's asking for the moon. The reality is he's willing to take $70 million, but he's not going to tell you that because that's not the art of the deal. That's not negotiating in real estate. Or flip it around the other way. He's going to buy one. Well, he'll bid $30 million for it. Well, he knows that's way too low, but that gets him a starting point to negotiate. And then sometimes they try to meet in the middle. And usually when he's successful, he'll meet in the middle right exactly where he intended to be in the first place. So the bottom line is that's sort of what we're seeing here with the tariffs and his negotiating style. And the U.S. economy, the people in the economy, the stock market, nobody likes that because they hate uncertainty. But that's his M.O. That's how he's going to continue to do that. So the bottom line is we're in a situation, and this is where I think the real damage comes from where we're at right now. If there's a miraculous turnaround in this very short run, this is a speed bump. That's all it is. This is a speed bump. Okay, we had a little bit of a correction in the market. NASDAQ was down 25% from top to bottom. But, and the big but here is, but when you have a bigger bear market, when you have a crisis that spawns a bigger bear market, there's two factors that are almost always present. They're always present from the standpoint of the depth of the bear. right? Not just that we have a bear. It's one thing to have a bear. We've always talked about the mama bears and daddy bears, the baby bears. The baby bears are corrections in a bull market. Mama bears are, in my view, 20-30% type bears. The daddy bears are typically stop at 50-ish, and sectors of the market go down a lot more than that. I still think this could be a daddy bear. It's just, we don't know yet. We'll have to watch and see. But in every case, the Fed had been tightening. The Fed had over-tightened and raised rates too high and left them there too long. If you plot the current Fed funds rate and you overlay it with the two-year Treasury, which is determined by supply and demand in the marketplace, the two-year Treasury is telling you the Fed's raised rates too high again, which they do every time. And then, of course, when stocks are grossly overvalued, that's the dynamite this thing usually blows up with.
All right, we'd like to take a small break to remind you how you can learn more about Cornerstone Financial Services, Jerry Tuma, myself, and the rest of our team. You go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. You can get Jerry's latest special report titled Bear Market Starting? A lot of good information in there about what we're seeing in the current economy and in the leading economy, why we think we may be in a bear already or getting ready to be. You can also catch his previous special reports there at cornerstonereport.com. You can listen to previous week's broadcasts and interviews. We've had a handful of interviews here recently. If you missed them, I recommend you go to our website and check those out. And for a free consultation, we encourage you to call us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. And if you haven't checked us out yet, we are available on the podcast forum on Spotify and Amazon Audible. So you can listen to it a little bit more convenient for you. All right, Jerry, beforehand we talked about the update on the economy and stocks, which of course includes talk about tariffs, but now we want to dive into it a little bit more. A lot going on, you know, since April 2nd was the big day that he announced all the big tariffs. A few days later, he did a reprieve of 90 days on certain things. China, he went ahead and upped again. So a lot's been going on. There's been a lot of people trying to become experts on the news that I don't think have even read up on tariffs that are telling me what they think. And a lot of people just don't understand, you know, President Trump and how he approaches things. So they just assume it's going to be like this forever. So this is the worst case scenario ever. But that's not how it works. Like we talked about in the first half of the show, he starts off high to come down to where he wants to be.
Right.
Even in the reprieve, I noticed that a lot of our tariffs stopped at 10% across the board.
Right.
And nobody was complaining about that anymore.
Oh, no. Because you see, if you're talking about 20 or 30% tariff and it just shocks the whole world system, it's like in the old days, I remember there was a movie with Jack Nicholson called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
And they used shock treatments back in those days. They'd come up and shock people. They thought somehow that got rid of their emotional memories or something, which proved to be a really bad idea. I had a cousin that did that, and she was never the same. So she had mild depression, and she was semi-zombie for a while there afterwards. But the point is this, it was a shock to the system. So now, it's only going to be 10%? Oh, wow, that feels so much better than 20 or 30. And guess what? Maybe that was the intent.
That may have been his goal the whole time.
All along. Very well could have been. But let's take a look at some of these other impacts, because the tariff situation, I think, is important. Again, if you look at if we're going to have more of a recession, I think we're in a mild recession already. I think that the CapEx plan's stopping. I think all the things that are happening that you're seeing, the shipping levels, we'll talk about shipping in just a moment, because we're getting ready to have shortages on the shelves, literally. Shortages on the shelves within 60 days because of the tariffs. I think this shock treatment, if you want to say that, I understand what Trump's ultimate goal is to do, and I agree in principle with what his ultimate goal is. But my goodness, it's going to take a bite out of certain types of industries and companies, and some of them will make it and some of them won't. And we really can't predict. There's hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of small businesses. But I'm looking at a couple of charts here. I talked about CapEx. Again, CapEx is where the company decides they're going to build a factory or they're doing something like that. And by the way, one of our radio listeners called and left me a message last week, and I thought I can't announce his name on the radio, but he'll know who it is if he's listening. He said, explain what a tariff is. Well, a tariff essentially is, okay, China or whomever sends a product over, they get it to port in Los Angeles, and they cannot undock it. They cannot get it off the docks without paying the tariff, correct?
Right.
And so they pay the tariff there, they can ship it. Well, what's happening is instead they're being routed, a lot of them, most of them, high percentage of them, they're being routed to Mexico or somewhere else because they don't have the tariff money to pay to get the stuff offloaded. Now, what happens is you go from Los Angeles, and then that means the trucking is going to slow down. That means the rail traffic is going to slow down. And right now, the best guesstimate we've got, this is from John Malden's thoughts from the front line. He said ocean container bookings have plummeted 64%. 64? Is that meaningful? Now, the entire U.S. economy is not made of only of things that are sent over on ships. But do you remember back when we had the 2008 crash? I still remember pictures of freighters sitting out there empty and or not able to get, just massive container ships out in the water near Hong Kong and Los Angeles, place like that, just parked. Why? Because they couldn't ship. Why? Because the whole system had shut down. Now, that took a little while to wear off. It didn't just happen overnight. But if you're going to say 64% of ocean container bookings, that's how far they're down. I mean, 64% of businesses, this is from one trucking company, made this statement, 64% of our business has vanished overnight. Without incoming containers, there's nothing to reload, nothing to export, and no way to keep our trucks moving. This particular guy is going to get hurt really bad, and he may or may not make it. He said, this loss of freight in the market will bleed into every area of transportation. I've already made the heartbreaking decision to lay off one-third of my staff. Any further cuts would cripple our ability to operate at even the most basic level. At this point, we're staring down the real possibility of shutting down entirely. He said, 10 years of fighting to keep a company alive and people employed through a global pandemic, the recession, the freight recession of 2023-4, and now this. So what may be underneath that's not being seen by the administration is how badly it's going to affect some of these people. And maybe they have, but maybe they haven't. I just, one guy commented, he said, if you want to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., can we try to not kill the companies that will actually help do that before we get a chance? So bring manufacturing back. If we kill them first, you know, what's going to happen? He said, I think maybe we need to use a scalpel rather than a sledgehammer. Of course, now these are all reactions from people that are getting hit really hard with this. One of the guys said, so we have to raise the prices sooner than later because we need to accumulate that money so we can spend it on tariffs. Again, they have to pay the tariff before they get the product. And then if they don't get the product, they can't ship it. And then ultimately they can't sell it. This completely screws up the cash flow of my business. He said, it's a mass impoverishment plan. If I have to raise my prices 50 or 70% or whatever ridiculous number that is, you're going to be paying that much more for exactly the same thing. And this is going to happen across a wide swath of things that you want to buy. Shoes, sweaters, sunglasses, power tools, you name it. And one thing that I can promise you is your salary is not going to go up like that. So the issue here is this is going to have a significant impact. My concern and Michael's view after listening to other folks is, okay, I think they've taken this into consideration. My view is maybe they've underestimated it. And as one of
they
the guys
being
said,
President Trump's team,
the Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan put it this way when he asked about small businesses. He said, once they talk themselves into slowing down, it'll be a while until they get restarted. So the small business element, which again is almost two-thirds of the economy, that to me is the part of the business that I'm really concerned about. If you look at CapEx intentions, again, they're plummeting. They're not quite as bad as COVID or the 2008 market. They're about as bad as the 2000 market. So we've seen a really big drop in that. The paralysis means companies are not going to buy new equipment. They're not going to hire new people. They're not going to build new factories, etc., because they were expecting to get revenue from their spending. In this case, they're getting zero, and probably AI is the only exception to this. All of this looks and sounds like a recession to me. The Texas manufacturing outlook, the general business activity, you look at the chart on that, down 35.8% from late last year, plunging. The issue with, again, we looked at the consumer expectations. Consumer expectations have plummeted. This is May 5th, bank credit analyst, and it's as worse, it's as bad as it's been in any of the recessions. And again, we talked about CapEx already. So what we're seeing is an abrupt slamming on the brakes. Year over year, trucking activity out of Los Angeles is already down 23%, but it will be more, probably 50% in the coming weeks if there isn't an instantaneous trade war resolution, and then massive layoffs coming to the West Coast trucking industry. And again, many of these people point out, David Bonson points out, most of our imports for what we do are not finished goods. They're intermediate products. So you got a guy, he's got 12 components that are made up of his product, and two of them only are made in China. How do you fix that overnight? So the issue here is, I think this is going to be a bigger crash to the world. A crash is probably not the right word. A bigger hit to the U.S. economy and ultimately the market than most people are anticipating. The Small Business Administration, where most manufacturing is done, is by small businesses, collectively hires 4.8 million workers. 47% of the small business manufacturing companies need imported inputs from either China or somewhere else to make their product. Can they change to another supplier? In some cases they can, sure, but often at higher prices. But many products simply can't be manufactured in the United States for logistic and economic reasons. Many small manufacturing businesses use machines that come from Europe and other parts of the world. They're simply not made in the U.S., and all those businesses are in serious trouble. So President Trump can exempt Apple iPhones and other technology because they're big. The small manufacturing companies, there's no visibility whatsoever into what they are doing. And then, again, so many said, hey, wait and see. We're paralyzed. We're not going to build a new factory. We're not going to expand our production. We're not going to hire new people. This is those are all multi-year commitments. You don't make them unless there's good reasons to expect favorable conditions. And right now, all this stuff is adding up to too many things that they don't see that there's going to be a way out of, or in the short run. So the question is, and this is an unknowable answer, we'll find out in a few weeks, how deep is this thing going to go based on the first leg of what could be in more than one leg? We'll see. If you do have a big bear market, like a daddy bear, there's more than one shoe that's going to drop. It's never just one shoe. So again, the common things that big bears have in common with typically are, number one, the Fed over-tightens, which they've done, clearly. Number two, stocks get extremely overvalued, which they've done, clearly. And we've gone through that multiple times in our last several newsletters. If you haven't read our last several newsletters, go to our website, cornerstonereport.com, and read it, because again, it's, in my view, proving out to be fairly accurate, maybe extremely accurate. We'll see. So the bottom line is that there's a whole lot of stuff. Goldman Sachs even said they're expecting a 20 to 30% decline in imports. So all this will also begin showing up in inflation in May, which will show up in June. So the May inflation numbers are going to go up because there's going to be less products available to be bought. And so the products that are available are going to go up in price. So you're in a stagflationary environment. There's not the good news so far. Now, hiring has stalled, but layoffs have not yet started. And again, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. If you talk to a business manufacturer, a businessman, a company, and you start into the first early phase of a recession, if this is a recession, which I believe it is, they normally don't start layoffs right away. They pause and they're like, oh, I need to assess what's going on here. Because the worst thing that could happen to them is they lay people off, and then the business conditions change radically back positive again. Now they got to try to rehire the people.
And retrain
them, or hire new people and retrain them, and that's expensive. So they don't want to let go of their employees unless they have to. And they normally don't have to until the recession is more pronounced. So it'll be a trickle effect at first. It won't be a flood at first. It'll be a trickle. And right now, in some areas, I think you're already starting to see a trickle, but right now it's still not showing up in the unemployment numbers. But again, that's lagging. And again, none of this really got started until April. So we're not even in the first half of the first inning of this
thing. All this activity, we're barely a month in.
I know. And it's craziness, all that stuff. So Bottom line is, we know, again, New York Times reports shipping containers dropped a third in the month of April. So it takes 20 to 40 days to ship from China to Los Angeles. It takes another 1 to 10 days to get the train to the cities that it's delivering to. May and June, they expect to see some empty shelves. This is, again, a New York Times article, which I don't quote them very often because of their, what I view as a liberal bias. But the bottom line is these are some good facts. So May to June, you're going to start seeing empty shelves. The summer, there's going to be shortages that are very apparent on the shelves. A lot of empty shelves, some clothing, toys, hardware, retail, possibly some drugs or drugstores, higher prices for the goods that are still on the shelf. Again, so Goldman said 20 to 30% drop in imports already. First will show up in the inflation rate in May, which we won't know about until June. So if you talk about being stuck between a rock and a hard place, that's where the Fed is right now. They know that if we're going into recession, they need to be lowering interest rates and fast. On the other hand, if inflation shows up, which it will, because you're going to have a bit of a spike from shortages, that's just the normal way things work, okay, where's your coin? You got heads on one side, tails on the other side, right? Your coin, flip it. Okay, what do we do? Inflation is going to have a big surge, not as bad as before, not as bad right after COVID, but there's going to be a surge of inflation because of these tariffs. And if there's a surge of inflation, the Fed should be raising rates, not lowering rates. But if we're going to a recession, the Fed should be lowering rates, not raising rates, and not staying the same. It's a classic formula for what's called stagflation, which I still remember in my undergraduate days in economic school at UT Arlington. In that particular class, we had a graduate student teaching, and he was really good. He said, there was no such term as stagflation until it happened. So 1973 and 74 was the worst bear market and the worst recession we'd seen since the Great Depression. And he said, economists taught that if inflation's going up or the unemployment's going up, they can't happen at the same time. You know, they're mutually exclusive to each other. And then he said, but then they did. And so he said in 1972 and 73 and 74, you had rising inflation and rising unemployment simultaneously. So they had invented a new term, stagflation. So I think that's what we're in. And by the way, I'm reminded again, I've quoted him a lot, Alan Greenspan, again, the second longest running Fed chairman of all time. And Greenspan made this comment in 2017. He said, you know, basically, we're headed into an inflationary environment, a stagflation in the next decade that we haven't seen since the 1970s. And as far as I can tell, he nailed it right on the head. So here's my question, though. Right now, we know what the current issues are. We know what's going on with the shipping, the manufacturing. We know that we're probably headed into a recession. If nothing else bad happens, no major shocks, no big other shocks, then I think the case is this probably is a mild recession. It's probably short-lived. Maybe the bear market continues. The stocks could overlook this potentially. I don't think they're going to. I think we've hit a major top in the market. And so you could make the case, the best case scenario is this is a mild downturn. It lasts a few months. And by the fourth quarter, we're back in gear again. That's a distinct possibility.
Mm-hmm.
However, if this is more of a significant bear market, which is still the way I think it is, there will be more shoes to drop. The tariff the tariff war is kind of like firing the starting pistol. The tariff war started the recession, I believe, and the bear market, but there's always unforeseen consequences. You can never tell where all the dominoes are going to fall ahead of time. Why? There are millions upon millions upon millions of things that could affect, and it's not humanly possible to know what all those are. Only God can tell what all those factors are. It's like a nuclear chain reaction. You don't know where it's going to go next, and there's no way to predict where it's going to go. You can predict some things, but you can't. Okay, well, airlines travel is down. Well, that's kind of predictable because it's a recession, most likely. Although it hasn't statistically been stated that it's a recession yet, I think we're probably in the first stage. And I don't think it's going to be a severe downturn in the second quarter, but probably the third quarter might be different. Again, Iran is a ticking time bomb. When is that going to go off? Don't know. Maybe it doesn't happen this cycle. We don't know. But historically speaking, again, you can't guarantee anything except for the fact that if it's a bigger bear, which is still what I think it is, because why? Number one, the valuations got to extreme. Usually speaking, when valuations get to historic extremes, which we talked about, and that's in our last newsletter, go to our website, cornerstonereport.com, and just read the most recent newsletter that we have there. Matter of fact, read the last two that I've done, one that I put Election Blues, which at the point in time after I wrote that, I thought I must be wrong, which turned out to be right, after all, for different reasons in some ways, but some of the things we identified in there are correct. The issue is that unemployment is still holding in there currently. I want to emphasize currently. I want to say it again, currently. I don't think it's going to hold in there. I think it's going to accelerate significantly between now and October or December. And so the point is here, I think it's, again, a bear market. I think it's probably going to be a severe one. If it is a severe one, though, if it's not a one down leg, like COVID was a one down leg bear, big panic, bottomed out quickly, turned around quickly because of all the stimulus. You know, this time we don't have all the stimulus to offset that. Congress is not coming out with massive spending plans. Part of our problem right now is the government is overspending way too much money already before we get into any kind of downturn. Part of the problem with this is if we end up with a Trump-induced recession, which is what it will be, he's going to end up owning this at the end of the day if it ends up in a recession. I'm not saying he can't recover, because he's got to recover by the midterms.
He'll tell you it was Biden's fault.
Of course. Yes, that makes sense. But the bottom line is, if we go into recession, and again, I think we're in one now already, then he's going to have to be the one that can solve it. Now, if nothing else major breaks during this time, then I could see the case that this is short and shallow, and he scrambles and they put something together that, at least with, you know, chewing gum and baling wire, you know, they get something cobbled together.
So I do want to clarify one thing, because we're kind of bouncing back and forth between the economy
right.
and the market.
Yeah.
Because you've talked about being mild, and then you talked about being severe.
Right.
And we are talking about two separate things there. Because, again, we go back and forth a lot because we're used to switching those gears.
Right.
But just to make sure, in case anybody got confused with that, we're talking about his view on the recession, is that it will probably be a mild recession. That's the economy view. When he's talking about the bear being more severe, that's the effect on the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's why he's using two different terms there that could sound, if we didn't separate them, could sound contradict
sense.
Each other.
Because they don't correlate exactly.
Right.
They tend to correlate, but that's probably, I would guess, without measuring it statistically, I would guess it's about 80% correlation. You know, so usually the economy and the stock market are going the same direction most of the time, but not all the time.
Right. You typically, bears will show up inside of a recession.
Right.
But they're not necessarily at the same magnitude.
Yep, that's right. So I'll leave with this final quote. This is, again, about shipping from John Malden's newsletter. He said, we talked about it before. Freight out of L.A. is collapsing. There are dozens. Right now they can see hundreds of container ships and tens of thousands of TEUs that have been kept at sea and can't enter port. Most of them are being routed to Mexico and Canada, where they sit in warehouses or docks. Businesses that bought goods that were shipped before April 2nd still have to pay the tariff before they accept the goods. If they prepaid for those, they still owe the tariffs, because, again, the tariffs are paid when they get to the dock, or they can't depart. They can't get and it's a tax. The old saying Milton Friedman had and Ronald Reagan said, if you want less of something, tax it. You know, so the tax has to be paid, unlike an income tax, the tax has to be paid before you get the product to sell it. If you have an income tax, you make a profit on it and then pay tax on the income. In this case, you're paying the tax before you even get the product to sell it. That makes it a lot worse for a small business. So that means whenever China bought so far, this is current, before Trump's latest statements, 150 to 245% more from products from China, that's probably not going to happen. That literally means they can't come out of port until the tariff has been paid. So he goes on, Molson Hart said this in Malden's newsletter, the White House put itself and its country in a bad situation, but doesn't realize it yet. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Around April 10th, China to U.S. trade shut down. It takes 30 days for containers to go from China to L.A., 45 to Houston by sea, 45 to Chicago by train, 55 to New York by sea. That means there's no economic effects of what have been done on April 10th until about May 10th. About that time, and it's already starting to happen, trucking work is going to dry up. Warehouses are going to start doing layoffs because no labor is needed to unload containers, and some products will be out of stock, reducing the need for shipping labor. This will start in the L.A. area, and after about 2 weeks, it'll hit Chicago and Houston. Let's say the White House, after 3 weeks, changes its mind. This isn't working. Tariffs back to zero. I don't think that's going to happen. China says, let bygones be bygones. We'll go back to how things were. I don't think that's going to happen. The bottom line is they're still going to have an impact, and it's just starting, but we just haven't seen it yet. So I think we're going to see higher prices and fewer goods on the shelves by no later than probably starting in May, but no later than June, July. And that's going to have a negative effect on the psyche of Americans. And that, to me, is another reason why I think we're headed into recession, even if it's a mild one and a continuing bear market.
Jerry Tuma's Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.